TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. This program is about Iraq. It comes to you today because of the concern that Iraq may become a target in the ongoing U.S. war on terrorism. You will hear from a man who worked in Baghdad for almost 2 years as the United Nations coordinator for the Oil for Food program. When Hans von Sponeck resigned in protest about the suffering of the Iraqi people, he ended his career as lifelong diplomat in the service of the United Nations. When he resigned, he said at a press conference, "It is overwhelmingly evident to me that the United Nations Security Council of today is a violator of the very laws that it and governments represented in the Security Council helped to create to protect innocent civilians. I do not say this lightly." End of quote. I went to hear von Sponeck speak at a college south of San Francisco in November 2001. He's a slender, humble man in his early 60s. He joked that he has always worn a suit, even in the Iraqi desert, on his many tours across the country. The audience was young. High school students had come as well, and he treated them with great respect. Hans von Sponeck was only 6 years old when World War II ended. His father, a general, had been executed on Hitler's orders in July of 1944. He grew up in a totally devastated post-war Germany and witnessed what is needed to bring a country back out of ruin. Here is Hans von Sponeck.
When my country, Germany, lost a war, and how glad am I that we lost this war. That my father was executed in the process is another matter. That is not why I hear, I'm not talking about this. But I, because of what happened to my family, I guess my path of life led me to the United Nations. And I was there 32 years. 30 years were very protective, peaceful years, concerned with development. I was the UN representative in Pakistan, in India, in Southern Africa. So I've seen a UN that I can only hope will survive in these next difficult years ahead. But what I wanted to say is, when Germany lost the Second World War, when we had managed to get rid of our brutal dictator, the international community came, led by your country, by your government, to give us aid, to give us a Marshall Plan, as it was called. We began reconstruction. We began to heal our country. And today, we are friends of America. When Iraq lost the Gulf War, it got sanctions. Why? Because Iraq did not manage to get rid of their leader. And now, 11 years later, can you imagine what happens to a country that is on its knees at the end of a war, not to forget the war against Iran, 8 long years of war against another country? So an Iraqi hasn't really known peace and tranquility since 1980, if that person is over 20 years of age. A catastrophic mental and physical situation. Iraq, when it lost that war, rightly, totally legally, was punished for having invaded Kuwait. When Iraq then withdrew from Kuwait in 1991, Iraq was given sanctions. And Iraq was also told that it had to disarm and get rid of all these weapons of mass destruction. But as it turned out, the sanctions that were imposed on Iraq were so severe and so all-embracing that instead of what really was meant to take place is punish the perpetrators, punish the party that had done the wrong, punish Saddam Hussein and his government. 23 million today, 23 million Iraqis are every day punished. And some of the statistics which you see, you can believe. You can believe because they were collected by international organizations, by the International Committee of the Red Cross, by CARE, by Caritas, by the World Health Organization, by the World Food Program, by the United Nations Development Program, by the UN itself. And when the United Nations says, UNICEF, the children's organization, that these children are dying because of poor sanitation, lack of food, malnutrition, and lack of medicines, then this is something which we cannot brush away as Iraqi propaganda. This comes from reputable international organizations. So this is only an extreme way of portraying the effects of a wrong policy. And when I became aware that I was associated with that wrong policy, what choice did I have? You would have taken the same decision if you were in my situation. Can I really go to bed in the evening thinking that if 5,000 kids are dying every month as a result of this policy, that means, please, that means that 147 mothers and fathers every day lose what is to them their most precious possession. I'm a father of three. I can't imagine that I lose one of my three children. A world would come to an end for me. This is not emotionalism. This is not just propaganda. This is what happens every single day. And the United Nations tried to introduce that program for which I was responsible, the Oil for Food program. But the Oil for Food program was, I keep saying, it's like a fig leaf that isn't covering anything because it is so totally inadequate. It's a smokescreen, a moral smokescreen, to say, yes, we are doing something for the people. I don't want to go into details because that would bore you maybe. But I want to just give you what I call the scandal of $119.70. Because $119.70 is all that Iraqis in the period of 4.5 years until the 13th of July this year, for this whole stretch that the Oil for Food program has existed, have received on a per capita basis. In terms of what? In terms of anything that is included in the Oil for Food program. That is not into their pocket. This is money to cover water supply, sanitation, education, health, agriculture, electricity, and of course food and medicines. $119.70 in the period of 4.5 years. Now, with that kind of situation, what kind of life does an Iraqi of your age lead? Let me just portray this to you. And I want to look at one of you students. Maybe you. May I ask your name? Brianna. This is something which I've seen because I've lived in Iraq for 17 months. I've traveled. And I made it very early on as my responsibility not just to manage an Oil for Food program, but also to be an interpreter of the local situation. And it was that second role which I assigned to myself which got me into trouble, because I started speaking, I briefed the Security Council, and what I would have told them if they had an interest and time is what I'm telling you now. The Iraqi Brianna would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, even though her school only started at 9 o'clock, and the school wasn't so far away. By bus, it would have been maybe 20 minutes. but there is no bus. She would have gotten up probably in a house in Baghdad or in Mosul or in Kirkuk or in Basra, where she would be very lucky if she had a bed for herself. She probably would share this bed and maybe sometimes no bed. I've been in houses of university professors who have sold everything they had in order to make ends meet. I know a university professor in home economics. She was trained and got her PhD in the US. She went back, and as a young lecturer, she had $300 to $400 as an income. Today, she's earning 19,000 dinar, which is about $10 a month as a university professor. So there isn't enough to live. So a lot of these middle class people, and Iraq was known to have a very strong middle class, have sold everything or have sold their heirlooms. You can go on Friday. Friday is their weekend. Friday, the offices are closed and people are trying to rest a little bit. They on Fridays go and sell these things in the market to have a little bit of income so that they can live. So your equivalent, the Iraqi Brianna, would get up, would then have a meal. The meal would be maybe a little bit of rice, maybe some porridge, maybe certainly some water. Nothing very substantive. With the water, the problem already would start, because water today is the number one killer of young people, of children in Iraq. Why? Because the water is polluted. The water is from the war, you have seen it, the pipes are broken, sewerage can come in, so the water supply is scarce and is dangerous. And so the chances are pretty good that the Iraqi Brianna would often have stomach problems. And if a baby is involved or a young child, it can be the cause of death. So finally, she would have eaten this little humble meal, and since there's no school bus, she would have walked to her school. September and October last year, I went with the Swiss television to Iraq to make a movie about a young girl and her life under sanctions. I walked into the school, and what I saw and struck me very quickly, here was this building in very bad shape and no glass in the window. Now, it doesn't rain so much. It's a desert country. It doesn't rain very much, but it has storms, and storms with high velocity, and a lot of dust comes into this. So the children in the classrooms are just faced with that reality, that the dust comes and makes life very uncomfortable for them. I asked the headmaster, I said, where I don't see any running water, there are no taps, and I also don't see any bathrooms. He got quite embarrassed because they don't have any bathrooms. And he pointed to the field and said, this is where faculty and students go if they have to go to the bathroom. Then he had in the courtyard a container for water twice a week. An old, dilapidated, decrepit-looking truck is bringing water to the school, and they have to pay per water tanker 35 US cents. And the school is struggling to pay for that. They don't have 35 cents very easily, and certainly not when a high school or primary school teacher earns 10,000. I told you the home economics teacher 19. That's 10,000. That's $5 a month for a teacher. The school can barely employ these teachers. Well, that is that reality. Then I asked, I said, I want to see the library. Well, the library was one cupboard in the headmaster's office containing 50 books. 50 books. And I want you to know that it is a U.S. postal regulation. You're violating a U.S. government law if you send books or papers to Iraq. Not allowed. Now, I'm not here to do anti-US bashing, I can tell you that. I am very fond of America. I studied here. My wife is American. My children went partly to school here. I'm often here. I served as a UN official. I think my credentials are clear. But to be critical against US policy doesn't make you anti-American at all. But can you imagine that if you have a friend in Iraq and you know that that person likes to play an instrument and you want to send some sheets of music, you cannot do it. It's against US postal regulation. So you have really Iraq not only under an economic embargo and sanctions, you have Iraq also under an intellectual embargo. So the young Iraqi Brianna in her school would have a miserable library. She would have no school meal, absolutely nothing. She would, in fact, have nothing to eat there. She would go home, and in the afternoon, late afternoon, she would maybe have something from the house. That was, again, not very substantive. I met, and I cannot forget this, I met once two young men, and with me was a Lebanese gentleman who worked for the Middle East Council of Churches. He asked these two men, they were in their 20s, when did they eat meat the last time? One of them said he thought about 2 years ago. The other one could not remember. Now, anyone who knows the Middle East, anyone who knows about Iraqis knows what big meat eaters they are. They like very much to eat meat. Now, you can hold in your mind, you can say, oh, this man there in front of us trying to talk to us, he really puts on a show. Because we have seen in the television lights, luxury shops, food, yes, and you see also a lot of fat people. But they constitute a tiny, tiny, tiny minority of the Iraqi people. They are the ones who are now benefiting from sanctions, who probably go to bed every night and say, thank God that there are sanctions, because they are breaking the sanctions, they get the income, they have everything, even access to international news, all not available for 99% of the population. So the Iraqi Brian would, after getting out of school, she would want to try and see her friends. If you want to make a telephone call in Baghdad, the rate of failure is 29 times of dialing before you get through. Because one of the items that is on the strictly on the forbidden list of imports is communication equipment. For 10 years, there was not one single item except what we needed in my office to have, for security reasons, communication equipment among our people. The Iraqis themselves, nothing doing. So the telephone system deteriorated more and more. So the Iraqi Brian cannot just go on the telephone and call her friend and say, listen, let's get together. And in the evening, she would come back into a very crowded household. In 10 years, there was no new construction. A lot of houses were destroyed. And yes, it's an extreme case, but I just want to illustrate what can happen. I know of a case where two families got together and they decided to have one apartment, 12 hours each. You take it, after 12 hours you vacate, and then I come and I take over with my family. Domestic violence in Iraq has increased because of these kind of living conditions. Marriages have gone down because young people cannot afford to get married. All the religious leaders I spoke to have told me this. And by the way, just a small, because you read also this, there is religious tolerance in that country. The Christian churches are full on Sundays. The Armenian churches are full. The mosques, of course, are full. That doesn't mean that a lot of things are not in order, that Saddam Hussein has done a lot of damage to that country. But I keep saying sometimes that we should not forget that Saddam Hussein also is not a self-made man. He was not created from within entirely. We helped to create this monster. He was our front man in the war against Iran. He was our ally, if you want. And this made us very dishonest for quite a while. When he decided to gas Kurds in 1988, your country, my country, other Western countries had diplomatic relations. We had embassies there. We did not protest. We did not say what we should have said. We didn't close our embassies. We didn't make a major fuss in the UN Security Council. But after the war, after the Gulf War, he became our enemy, and we started accusing him of these kind of atrocities. Pretty grim picture that I'm painting for you, but it's a picture of reality. There is something called the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. This is a document which most governments around the world have accepted, which reflects what is your right, what is my right, what is Iraqi people's right. And in there is one paragraph which is to me very important, and that is Article 26 of that Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It says in that every human being has the right for the full development of the human person. Now, with that description that I gave you, do you think that an Iraqi Brian has a chance for the full development of her potential? You have it. They don't. What kind of political generation is growing up in Iraq as a result of these conditions? Now, having said all that, I hope you understand a little bit more why I decided I could not associate myself with that. The UN is, quite frankly, misused by the Security Council, and by, here I again sound as if I'm anti-American, I'm not, by the US government and by the British government. I think I better stop here. I've left out many, many things, but let me stop, and then you can throw your metaphysical tomatoes at me. You can be angry with me. You can tell me whatever. I will try as honestly as I can to respond to you. But that's my story. Thank you.
That was Hans von Sponeck, United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator for the Oil for Food Program for Iraq from 1998 to 2000. After he resigned in protest, he connected with a peace movement. The talk that you just heard was given to college and high school students in November 2001. The first question from the audience was from a young man who stated angrily that Iraq was still refusing to allow weapons inspectors to enter the country. Here is Hans von Sponeck's answer.
It's correct what you're saying. And I, in October of 99, in an interview with the New York Times, and I got seriously into trouble there for the first time with your government and the British government, I said, don't fight your political battle, these were my words, on the back of innocent Iraqi people. The confrontation between Iraq and the outside world, who paid the price? Not Saddam Hussein. He is in the power, but the people. So I always wanted to see a delinking of economic sanctions and the military embargo. And if we really had wanted to solve this conflict, we could have done that. But there was another agenda. There was a hidden agenda. And let me just, with one sentence, refer to it, and you know exactly when I say that, what I mean. Henry Kissinger long ago said, oil is much too important a commodity to be left in the hands of the Arabs. That's the real agenda. That's the hidden agenda. The oil factor is so powerful. Iraq is not Somalia. Iraq is not Sierra Leone. Iraq is not Fiji or Samoa or Bhutan, small country. Iraq is a wealthy country, and some people today say that the largest oil reserves are no longer in Saudi Arabia, but they're in Iraq. So it has maybe nothing to, so much to do with feelings. It has more to do with oil. Oil as a central piece of interest. And I personally believe that this is the most likely explanation. You see, there are many interpretations of why in 1991 the U.S. forces did not go the last leg of this trip towards Baghdad, why they stopped and ultimately left. Some say body bag story. Mr. Bush didn't want to see large numbers of American soldiers come home in body bags. I'm sure this had something to do with it. But something else could have been the case, to me more convincing. A contained Saddam Hussein in the box is much more advantageous than no Saddam Hussein. Because as long as he's in the box, you have something you can target. And by doing that, you can justify your presence in the Gulf. You have a handle on the oil in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. You have an enormous opportunity for the export of military hardware. So much so that a country of the wealth of Saudi Arabia ran out of cash to pay for its services. It overextended itself. So I think it has something to do with oil and power.
This is the former humanitarian coordinator for the Oil for Food program for Iraq, Hans von Sponeck. He resigned in protest after almost 2 years in Baghdad. When he took the job in 1998, he had hoped to see a plan to rebuild the country. Instead, he saw slow and deliberate starvation, weekly unauthorized bombing runs by the U.S. and British Air Force, and then the added danger of another war on Iraq. This was the first half of a one-hour program with Hans von Sponeck. He answered many more questions, and next week you will hear about his interaction with the Iraqi government and his travels across the country. Later, over lunch, I asked him to tell me why his father was executed by the Nazis. I hope you have a pen handy for more information. Find out more about Hans von Sponeck on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get a copy of the full one-hour program with Hans von Sponeck for $12. That includes shipping. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number 877-TUC-TAPE translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Moriah Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.